You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to Celtic Down Under. My name is Laura and I'm joined as always by Liam as we do yet another World Cup preview. This time we are looking at Spain in Group E. Liam, how you doing?
Good. Spain are an interesting one. I'm looking forward to getting into this discussion today because they're an unpredictable team, but they're seldom a boring team.
It's a funny situation because despite the dominance of Real Madrid in the Champions League over the last few years, a lot of the success of the international team was based on that core of Barcelona players over that really successful period that they had domestically, translating better than in any other scenario I've ever seen into the national team as well. So that's going to be interesting to see the difference between this Spain team and the Spain team of you know, what's now 10 years ago, that team that won both the World Cup and the European Championships. What about yourself? I've not heard a lot of discussion, ironically, about Spain being amongst the favourites. Is that fair, or do you think people are underestimating them going into this tournament?
I think they've kind of floated under the radar a wee bit. But to be honest, considering the let's just say the discord that was in the Spain squad at the last World Cup, mm-hmm. I think they'll be quite happy about that they're not being touted as one of the favourites.
Yeah.
I think they're a team that can do some damage in the tournament for sure. I kind of go back and forth with are Spain a tier one or a tier two World Cup team? Because for me, mm-hmm. tier one teams are the teams that go there with a serious expectation of winning it, right? So that's like Argentina, Brazil, historically Germany, France. But then mm-hmm. the question is, are Spain in that tier, or are they in the secondary tier of teams that are good, unlikely to win it, but might have an outside chance if things go their way? So teams like Croatia, Belgium, England, that's your tier two teams, in my opinion. And I'm trying to make my mind up. Do I think Spain, as they are just now, are a tier one or a tier two team? Because they're somewhere in the middle, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, just looking at the history of Spain in the World Cup, which I'll just bring up just now, I do think they fall firmly into the in-between, and I'll tell you why. If you just look at this year, I mean, apart from that win in 2010... Yes, yeah. They're regular qualifiers to the tournament, but they don't seem to do much beyond that. They occasionally get to the round of 16, the quarterfinals, that kind of thing, but majority of their exits have been at group stage. I mean, again, as we've talked about before, that defending champions curse hit them in 2014, where they went out in the group stage, and again in Russia, they went out in the round of 16. So they're one of these strange ones where really their international pedigree has only been established, and I would say in the last decade or so.
Yeah, I mean, they were pretty good in the 80s when you had Butragueño and players mm-hmm. like that, but But again, they were a team that went from the sublime to the ridiculous. Beat Denmark 5-1 in that tournament. And Denmark were the only team at 86 to win all of their group matches. So they had become one of the favourites for the tournament. And Spain smashed them. Next round, they get gubbed by Belgium. You know, it's just, it's like that. That's Spain in a nutshell for me. Beating one of the best teams in the tournament one day, and a few days later getting beat by a pretty mediocre Belgium team. You know,
yeah, it's a strange sequence of events. You know, they don't that particular period of dominance in the last decade was short lived, and they almost seem to be returning to baseline, and it'd be interesting to see exactly how they can manage to do when they actually get to the World Cup. Having said that, and we'll dive into it with the squad in a little bit, they do have that upcoming generation of talent. Again, Barcelona's heavily responsible for a lot of it in Pedri, Gavi and Ansu Fati. So we'll definitely look at those. But let's have a little bit of a look at how they got here, the qualification. I'll just bring that up just now as well. You know, it's interesting because having done this in more depth than I've ever done any kind of looking into a team's approach to a World Cup, you do realise how tough the European teams have it. So many good European teams have missed out. And I actually think this is one instance in which it's probably, although it's a smaller group, it's probably one of the stronger groups in terms of who Spain had to get ahead of to get here. You've obviously got Sweden, you've got Greece, who some people don't think are a particularly massive force in international football, but it would be doing them a massive disrespect considering they won the European Championships not so long ago. What do you make of their approach to the World Cup and how they managed to get there? It looks as if they've had a pretty dominant group campaign.
Well, what I would also say in that group, although perhaps the points totals don't reflect it, but Georgia, apart from obviously Ukraine, they are regarded as one of the strongest of the former Soviet countries. Mm-hmm. So they are no mugs either. That is actually, if you take Spain out of the equation, that's a really interesting group, because any of the next three, I think, could potentially win that group if Spain were not there. Mm-hmm. Spain went about their job professionally. You know, they only lost one game. I think it's a shame Sweden didn't make it, because obviously historically we do have a bit of an affection for Sweden. But, you know, that again, as you say, that's the difficulty of European qualifying. The way these groups break down, and the fact that only the winners are going to automatically qualify, you know, that makes it all the more difficult for Sweden, Norway, Scotland to get to these tournaments now, you know.
And the other thing as well is, and I know it's a case of you have to beat what's put in front of you, they've obviously been playing in a smaller group, Spain, so they've had to play less games, and obviously they've got less chances for points then, and so it kind of evens itself out. But you would argue sometimes that a larger league format or a larger group, whatever you want to put it, is slightly more difficult to negotiate, both in terms of, you know, fitness and fatigue and things like that, and also just, you know, the number of different teams that you're going to have to come up against. But it's interesting nonetheless. Looking at the squad, which I'll just bring up here, as I said before, the Barcelona players are really the fulcrum of the talent yet again. But we'll start at the back, just because there's an interesting discussion point before you even get out from between the sticks with the Spain squad. Just looking at it here, we've got the goalkeepers. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I couldn't pick any of those three goalkeepers out of a lineup. It is not the most high-profile set of Spain goalkeepers I've ever seen in my life.
No. It's.
I'll just pull it back up
there. Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. If any of them walked past me in the street, I wouldn't recognise them. You know, and it's very unusual to say that when you think of some of the great Spanish goalkeepers we've had in history. You know.
Yeah, obviously the ones from my time growing up watching football, you had Canizares, you had Casillas, You had, you know, in later years, David De Gea, whose omission is a rather high-profile one. Considering De Gea is the one that we really know an awful lot about, what do you think the reason is for his omission? Do you think he still merited a call-up, or is Manchester United's form in recent years, you know, really done him a disservice in terms of getting him that call-up that he would have probably been expecting, I would have thought?
I'm very surprised that he's not there, because, to be honest, I think, and this is no disrespect to these clubs, but even a struggling Manchester United keeper is going to be a better bet than a Brentford or a Brighton keeper. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I really don't understand that. De Gea is known for having a bit of an ego, so it could be the case that he's maybe fell out with somebody in the Spanish FA. I don't know. But that is possible, because he is quite outspoken. And maybe the management have decided that unity is more important than quality.
Yeah, I don't know where I fall in terms of that argument sometimes, because I think there's a balance to be struck between being humble enough to be easy to work with, but also having the ego required to push yourself that extra mile that's required at the World Cup. And you do wonder whether Spain will miss that if they don't have it going into the especially if they get through the group going into the later stages of the tournament. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Moving down to the defenders, we've obviously got Cesar Azpilicueta playing in what I presume will be his last World Cup, Chelsea captain. Hugo Guillamon of Valencia, Pau Torres of Villarreal, Eric Garcia of Barcelona, Alejandro Baldi of Barcelona, Dani Carvajal of Real Madrid, another Spanish stalwart, Jordi Alba of Barcelona, and Aymeric Laporte of Manchester City. I have to say, this is where games could be won and lost for Spain for me, because I think they've got the potential to put out a really, really strong back four or back three, depending on what shape they decide to play.
Yeah, I mean, you don't historically associate Spanish football with spectacular defending. But a bit like Brazil in recent years, their defence has become remarkably solid. And, you know, the old idea of Spain being a team that it's all right if we lose three, we'll score four, is kind of out the window these days. They've mastered the ability to eke out a 1-0 when they have to, you know?
Absolutely. And it's just interesting to see there that even in the wing-back positions, they've got Jordi Alba, Azpilicueta and Carvajal. Carvajal, I think, can play on either side. Azpilicueta's right-sided, Jordi Alba's left-sided, and Azpilicueta's got that flexibility of being able to play as a centre-half or as a full-back. So there's plenty to play about with there, and that's before you even talk about Eric Garcia and Aymeric Laporte, who are two solid options as centre-backs as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think they've got plenty of options there and plenty of ways to change it up, and that flexibility could really help them be a bit of an unpredictable force in the tournament.
Well, the fact that you look at those players and you think which three or four of them are going to start, I genuinely don't know, because they're all potential starters, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, as we like to do, looking at the list of clubs there, you've got Villarreal and Valencia, who are always there and thereabouts from Spain in terms of European places. And then we don't need to discuss the fact that Chelsea, Barcelona, Real Madrid and Manchester City are all represented there, that, you know, these players are playing at a high level, and it'll be understandable to see them to go far, hopefully, for their club. Looking at the midfield, we've got, Barcelona stalwart Sergio Busquets, who is one of the last remaining remnants of that successful Barcelona and Spain side of the early 2010s. We've got Marcos Llorente of Atletico Madrid, Pedri of Barcelona, Rodri of Manchester City, Koke of Atletico Madrid, Gavi of Barcelona, and Carlos Soler of PSG. What I like about this midfield, to be honest, looking at it, is it's got that really good mix of hard-working ball winners and creative midfielders. Is that a fair assessment, would you say?
Yeah, there's also a good blend of youth and experience there.
Yeah.
You know, guys like Busquets, who have been through it all, bringing on younger players like Rodri and Koke, you know.
I think you know, it's one of these situations where they might just, we've talked in the past about squads who maybe have left a player out Ryan Gravenbach for Netherlands is one that I expected maybe to go. And I think it's maybe a mistake that he's not there for Holland. Whereas I think here, like you say, Spain have taken the approach of, yes, we need those experienced heads in, but the fearlessness and the creativity of those young players is going to give us something different as well.
Aye. Spain are a team that are built on dynamism, and the defence and the midfield both show that. The ability to switch it up and to do something unpredictable. Yeah. You will probably find that the whole idea of squad rotation, Spain are one of the teams that are really going to embody that as the tournament progresses, because they could quite easily play a completely different 11 from one game to the next.
Yeah, I have to say, most of the other squads that we've looked at so far, I personally have felt it's quite obvious who are the people there to rotate out in terms of, you know, making up the squad and who's actually there to do the majority of the work in the first 11. But like you say, with this Spain team, it could be a case of it really will be a 26-man effort for Spain if they're going to get further on in the tournament. With that said, we'll look at the front line. We've got Alvaro Morata of Atletico Madrid, Jeremy Pino of Villarreal, Ferran Torres of Barcelona, Marco Asensio of Real Madrid, Pablo Sarabia of PSG, Dani Olmo of RB Leipzig, Nico Williams of Athletic Club, and Ansu Fati of Barcelona. Now, not the most high-profile front line of Spain forwards that I've ever seen. And before we go on to talk about the goal threats there, one that I wanted to talk about specifically is Alvaro Morata. Now, he's a slightly heavily maligned striker, I think. He's got a reputation for not taking chances and not being particularly high scoring, which for a striker is a major issue. Is that a reputation you feel he deserves to have earned, or are people a bit harsh on him, do you think?
I think people kind of forget the fact that when you're playing with the greatest of respect, when you're playing for Atletico Madrid, it's a lot harder to be a 25-30 goal a season striker than if you're playing for Real Madrid or Barcelona or PSG, as some of the other forwards are, you know. I rate Morata. I think he's a good player, and I really do think that the criticism often comes from those who don't understand the tactical nuances of the game. You know, I've had similar arguments. I'm going on a slight tangent here, but I've had similar arguments with Celtic fans recently about Daizen Maeda. Because they've said, you know, oh, he doesn't score enough goals. And I'm like, we don't play him as an out-and-out striker. He's not supposed to. He's supposed to set them up for other people to score the goals. And I think that Morata, although he is more of a natural goal scorer, I think, it's like he will bring other players into the game, but he will not get the credit for that because he's not the one that sticks the ball in the net.
Yeah, I think his stature and his build lend him to, although you say, as you say, he's a natural finisher, it does lend him to being a bit more of a target man at times. And when you look at the the players that he'll have running off him, the likes of Ansu Fati, Marco Asensio and Ferran Torres, they're going to benefit directly from that. It reminds me a little bit of the argument back in the day that England fans had about Emil Heskey not scoring enough goals for England in that pretty atrocious song 5-1 even Heskey scored. I mean, I think that does the guy, it's funny, but it does the guy a great disservice, because I think without Heskey, Owen and Rooney don't get nearly as many goals as they ended up getting. Certainly it was a young Wayne Rooney, but
no. What England fans forget is that for every time that Michael Owen or Wayne Rooney nipped in at the back post and scored a tap-in, it's because there were probably three men on Heskey at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's what you forget.
Or Heskey was the man who got the flick on at the front post, you know?
Yes, yeah. I'm no fan of England generally, but I really do think Heskey is a very underappreciated player. Yeah. And I think Morata, it's a similar narrative that's being built by certain, I would respectfully say, less educated football journalists.
Absolutely. Just before we go to look at the fixtures, I have to say my attitude towards Spain and their potential chances has changed a little bit looking at that squad. I think there's more quality there than I was maybe anticipating. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. You know, Spain historically are quite underachieving, if like you say, apart from the one time they've won it. And traditionally a big team crashes at the early stages, and I have said that I think it could be France or Spain. Mm-hmm. But looking at that squad, it's hard to see. It's hard to see Japan or Costa Rica beating that. You know.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we'll just get the fixtures up just now, just to see the lay of the land as far as those fixtures go. Because as we all know, that the sequence of fixtures can be a major factor in deciding how things go. Spain have got arguably the easiest opener of the group in playing Costa Rica. They then have to face Germany, which nobody would be wanting to do in Group E, in the middle match, and then they're closing out against Japan. Looking at that, I mean, we've been through this with numerous groups so far, but I mean, in some ways, there's more pressure on them in the first game than a lot of other teams, because you'd have to think that game against Costa Rica is a must win, because anything that they get against Germany is going to be a bonus.
I mean, it's an interesting group, this, in the sense that both the two favourites, Spain and Germany, are both opening up against teams that they are expected to beat fairly mm-hmm. comfortably. You know, as much as we love Japan, we've got to say that Germany and Spain should wipe the floor with them if the form guide goes according to plan.
And yet, both of them are fielding squads that many would agree are not the greatest squads either nation has ever put to a tournament.
No, definitely not. And I think that the shock could come from, I mean, I hope that Japan sneak through this group, because one of either Spain or Germany bottle it. But I do think that it's an interesting narrative, because Spain play Costa Rica first and Germany play Japan first. Mm-hmm. If either of them don't win that first game for whatever reason, they're then playing each other thinking, oh God, if we don't win this, we could be going out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is the idea. I mean, Spain-Germany for me is the tie of the first round already.
Yeah.
You know, closely followed by France-Denmark. But I think that it would be an even better, more interesting tie if there was the added spice of one of them potentially being, like, knocked out or almost knocked out the tournament if they lost.
Yeah, yeah. I think what's absolutely certain is, you know, with the number of matches that are on over the next couple of weeks, especially with the group stages, you know, well, depending on time difference, depending on work schedules and everything, we'll all struggle to take absolutely every game in. But I think one that nobody will want to miss in that first round, as you said, is Spain-Germany.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's on at silly o'clock Japan time, so I'll have to make do with the highlights, I think.
I know, I'm sitting here very busily thinking, because obviously the times on there are UK times, and it's all very convenient for me, unfortunately not for yourself, but then, yeah, them's the breaks, unfortunately. Them's the breaks.
Two of Japan's three games are on at watchable times here, so I guess that's as good as I could hope for.
I'd like to think FIFA did that somewhat deliberately, but that would be giving them a bit too much credit, I think.
Well, putting the final game of the round at 4 o'clock in the morning is definitely a very FIFA thing to do.
Yeah, that's fair. just to close out the Spain chat, I think. I have to say, I came into this thinking, they're a weakened side. They are not what they used to be. I doubt that they'll have much of an impact at the World Cup. But a quick glance through that squad, and, you know, I think they could surprise a few people. I think a few people will be underestimating, especially the likes of Pedri and Gavi and Ansu Fati, if they haven't been paying attention to Spanish football in the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that... particularly Ansu Fati has really impressed me in what I've seen of him. You know, as a heavier man myself, it's always nice to see a Fati doing well, you know. But I do think he's quality. And Barcelona, because of their current financial situation, they need to bring through players like that.
Yeah.
So if he can do well on the biggest stage of them all, then that would be really good for Barcelona's future and for Spanish football's future.
Absolutely. Whether it's at this World Cup or another one, Spain will not be far away, I'm sure, going forward. That said, that's the end of the Spain review. We've done Germany and Spain for Group E. Next up will be Japan. And yeah, we're looking forward to getting into that. Please make sure you watch the rest of the videos that we've done and the remaining videos that we've got coming up for the run into the World Cup. As we record this, the World Cup is about to start this evening, UK time, sometime tomorrow morning for Liam over in Japan. So it's very exciting times, but hopefully you can join us throughout the World Cup for more coverage. Liam, thank you very much for joining me, and I'll see you in the next one.
Thank you. See you then.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.